live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist.
Around the world, the trip begins with a kiss. Rome, if you want to, roam around the world.
Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful March weekend wherever you happen to be. If you've been listening to the show, you know that we've come from everywhere from Destin, Florida to Casa de Campo in the Dominican Republic. Where are we today? Well, get out your maps, boys and girls. 9 degrees, 0 minutes north. 80 degrees, 0 minutes west. That should tell you something very interesting about where we are, which we'll be talking about later in the show. We're coming to you from Panama. In fact, from the Trump Ocean Club right here in Panama City, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we will solve it right here on the air. That latitude and longitude means, amazingness, that Panama is the only place in the world where you can see the sunrise in the Pacific and set on the Atlantic. That never happens anywhere else. Amazing. And of course, you know the Panama folks because of the Panama Canal, but it's so much more than that. In fact, imagine this, about 1,000 islands, actually more than that, 1,000 miles of coasts. And actually, when I said more than 1,000 islands, think about this, 800 islands on one side, 600 on the other. We're talking lots of stuff that nobody even knows about other than the Panama Canal. We'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show. And of course, coming up, an update of the airfare wars out there and a little bit of story on what's ever happened to first class from our good friend George Hopica from airfarewatchdog.com. We'll talk a little bit about Panamanian food and winter in the national parks. Probably the best time to go, and nobody ever thinks about that, as opposed to standing in line for the rest of your life in Yosemite in July. Who would ever want to do that? Another thing I want to talk about today, because you've heard about it in the news, it rears its ugly head about once a year, maybe once every 18 months, where you see the outbreak of what they call the norovirus on cruise ships. And everybody thinks it's like the end of the world, and how did it happen? Well, what is the norovirus? It's really basically the stomach flu. And how did this gastrointestinal thing happen? Well, everybody has a theory. I'm now going to tell you mine. And I tell you this without any reservation that I can't promise you I'm right. I can't tell you I have facts to back it up. I'm telling you intuitively, I would almost bet my career on this. You know who's at fault for the gastrointestinal outbreaks on cruise ships? It's the cruise lines. No, they didn't infect you. The problem here is their absolutely draconian cancellation policies. Let me put it in perspective. On most cruise lines, on cruises that are 6 nights or longer, you have to cancel 75 days in advance to get a full refund. If you cancel under 56 days, you may even get half. And under that, maybe nothing at all. So now put yourself in the position of somebody who's already has the flu, who's already sick, 5 days before the cruise, and finds out, whoops, if I cancel, I lose everything. Well, I'm still standing. I'm still breathing. Yes, I'm sick as a dog, but I'm going to take the cruise, and off they go to the salad buffet. And we all know how those diseases get spread. I really think it's because of that. People are actually boarding the ships already sick, especially in the winter months. So, what have the cruise lines done about it? Well, the best they can under the circumstances, and what you'll see on many cruise lines now, is at the entrances and exits of all public areas, they've got hand sanitizer machines, and they openly encourage you to wash your hands and wipe them with the Purell stuff every time you walk into a dining room and every time you leave, which you should be doing anyway, even at home, and every time you go to the bathroom. Most people don't think about that. Most people don't do it. But think about this. And I just gave you the 75-day deal. Listen to this. On holiday season cruises, the cancellation policies require you to cancel 90 days in advance. or you get penalized a lot of your money. And if you've booked a high-end suite on certain cruise lines like NCL, how about 120 days in advance? That's draconian. So if people are getting sick on the cruise ships, it's because, I'm telling you, I would bet my career on this. It started with those cancellation policies with people saying, I'm just going to go. I don't want to lose the money. Because they don't allow you to transfer the actual cruise ticket. They make you go or you cancel. And if you cancel, do you think they fill that cabin? You bet they do. So it's a double whammy for them, and it's a true double whammy for you. So now, how do you get around that? There are some insurance policies out there, not offered by the cruise lines, by the way. You know what I say about that. Never buy travel insurance from the travel provider themselves. Buy it from a third party. But there are cruise lines out there that you can get, not through them though, cancellation insurance that allows you to cancel for any reason. However, the premiums are not like 9, 10, 11, or 12%. They could be as high as 36%. So be careful about what you're doing and do us all a favor. If you're really going to be that sick, don't go on the cruise. Or at least let us know so we can confine you to your cabin. Hey, let's get to some emails very quickly here. We've got one from Dennis in Miami, Florida. We are traveling to Switzerland in August. Should we buy currency in our local bank, at the airport, or wait till we get to Zurich? How about none of the above? Here's what you need to do, Dennis. Get yourself an ATM card from a bank that doesn't charge you a foreign transaction fee. There are a number of credit card operators and banks that will do that for you, including other financial institutions like Charles Schwab, where they don't charge you a fee or they rebate your fee from other foreign ATMs. And then just use your ATM card at local banks, wherever you happen to be, to get whatever you need that day at the day of exchange rate they're giving their best customers. So you're not getting hit with commissions from money changers, and you're not getting hit with commissions when you change the money back. You're just taking out exactly what you need, and it makes the most sense. There's one more thing that I do, though, in terms of currency, and it makes a statement, and it also creates a conversation. And anybody wants to see it, I can show it to you. It's in my bag right in this minute. Every time I travel, whether it's to Panama or Paris, I go to a bank, and I get $200 in $2 bills. They're legal tender. They're completely current and valid. And when you tip somebody with a $2 bill, guess what? They remember you. They absolutely remember you. And they look at the bill for a minute like you're nuts, and then you realize, no, this is legal tender and it's fine. When was the last time you saw anybody exchange anything with a $2 bill? The answer is when you do it the next time you travel. It actually makes a big difference. So once again, don't buy any kind of foreign currency in the United States. You'll pay a hefty premium and a hefty commission, and you won't get a good exchange rate. Don't do it overseas at one of those money changers at the airport. Just use your ATM card. Just make sure you're using an ATM card from a bank or financial institution in this country that doesn't charge you either a foreign transaction fee or basically an ATM usage fee. And there are banks and financial institutions that do that. When we come back, we're going to upgrade ourselves. We're going to be talking to George Hoboka from AirfareWatchdog.com and talk to George about how do you actually pick the best first-class cabin, assuming you get that chance to begin with. We'll be back with more from the Trump Ocean Club in Panama City, Panama, when we return to Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Got a travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg with you on this March weekend, coming to you from the Trump Ocean Club in Panama City, Panama. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And by the way, speaking of petergreenberg.com, we talk about this all the time. Go to that website for our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard and essential work in places like Chile, Western China, in Haiti, in Japan, in Christchurch, New Zealand. They just acknowledge the one-year anniversary of that earthquake. And every week we focus on a different volunteer vacation project because there's so many different ways for you to give back and have a great experience at the same time. And this week the focus is on Panama. If you want to send your kids on an educational summer program, there's something called Amigos de las Americas. And it's been working in Latin American communities since 1965. And this summer they've got two programs in Panama. You can spend a summer volunteering in the coastal town of Coclé, working with the local youth and environmental projects, or another involves working with the indigenous people of Guniala. Now, the fee includes your international airfare, your food, and your lodging. The only application problem is the deadline's coming up on April 3rd, so log on to my website to get more information on that or plan for one next year. And if you want any more information on that, of course, we have the entire list at petergreenberg.com. One other housekeeping note, check out my new book. It's called New Rules of the Road, The Travel Detective's Guide to Great Journeys in Tough Economic Times. And that's available through our website, petergreenberg.com. And what's in there, which is really cool, in addition to all the great insider tips I always give you, we got a great section on what we call one-tank trips, great places where you can go under 300 miles, under one tank of gas, and without having to mortgage your house. So check it out, New Rules of the Road, The Travel Detective's Guide to Great Journeys in Tough Economic Times. Now, our next segment, I have to tell you, in the entire history of the show, we've never done this segment. So we must be getting better economic times because our next guest, the founder of AirfareWatchdog.com, George Hoboka. George, are we really going to tell people how to pick the best first-class seats on airlines?
Well, you know, first class is very expensive, Peter, as we know, but I usually travel first class by using miles to upgrade. And what we found was that different airlines have different planes with different first class cabins. A lot of airlines are upgrading their first class cabins and their business class cabins as well. And some of the cabins are much better. Some of the seats are much better than others, depending on the aircraft you fly.
I agree. I mean, for example, when Singapore Airlines came out with their first class seat on their Airbus, when Emirates came out with their first-class seat, I basically wanted to move in and just, like, declare it as my permanent residence.
Yeah, you know, Singapore Airlines actually has first-class cabins that have double beds, and they have walls. So I don't know what goes on in them, but potentially...
Well, you know what, George? You mentioned that. When Singapore, which doesn't necessarily, you know, indicate a great sense of humor historically, the Singaporeans really don't have one that I've ever noticed. They actually branded that particular cabin without even realizing it, because when that cabin was introduced, they held a press conference. And you can't make this stuff up. They held a press conference in which the head of Singapore Airlines said, "We need to let everybody know that this particular first class seat is for one passenger only, please."
Well, you know, even the business class, you can fit two people in, but it's not private. But, yeah, no, they're very, very wide seats. So speaking of Singapore, their Airbus A380, which I just flew on, has these better seats, as do the 777-300, but the B-77, the Boeing 777-200, is an angled lie flat seat. So you're paying pretty much the same price, but you're not getting the same product. So,
well, you know what? When you say it's an angled lie flat seat, I call those seats flat lies.
Exactly. They're not very comfortable. You end up sliding down by the
it's
end
sort
of
like people described it to me as being in a very bad gynecologist office.
Right. You're in the stirrups.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we have a chart on the website. If you Google Airfare Watchdog First Class Cabin, it will pop right up. And we list some of the planes and some of the airlines. As you know, a lot of the American airlines, too, the U.S. airlines, are upgrading their cabins. So, for example, American Airlines, the Boeing 777 has really good seats that are very wide. But the 767-200 model is not so great. And you can also go to seatguru.com. That's SEATGURU.com. They have some good charts, too, that show the different aircraft.
Well, you know, of all these, I'm looking through this chart and having experienced a lot of these things, you really hit the mark. But there is one airline out there now, and we did a story on them. Air New Zealand, in the coach section, came out with a seat that was actually designed by their flight attendants in coach, and they affectionately call it cuddle class, because it's three seats in coach that literally become almost a couch without the armrests. And for a couple or for a family of three, I'm telling you, it's the way to fly.
Right, the leg rest goes all the way horizontal, and it actually makes a couch. I suppose if you put a blanket down or maybe a duvet, it would be very comfortable.
Exactly. So for a little bit more money, you're not spending that huge premium for first class if you can't upgrade using miles like you do. Well, and when you did this survey, George, what was the biggest surprise of the seats in first class? The one that you said, wow, this one we never knew was this great, or boy, does this one suck?
Well, I think the best one is definitely Singapore Airlines, both in first class and in business class. I flew in business class, but I was able to sneak down to the first class cabin, and I was really blown away by the luxury of these seats. But even the business class seats, they're definitely the widest business class seats in the sky, and you can literally fit two people as long as they're not too large. That's cuddle class, too. So you can actually cuddle in the seat. And I think we also have to give kudos to United and American and Delta. They are improving their product to catch up with the foreign airlines like Emirates, Singapore, Air France, Lufthansa. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. An inclined seat is not a lie flat seat. It is a flat lie. They're very uncomfortable.
Okay, so what was the seat that was your biggest disappointment?
Like United Airlines, their older planes are 757s, which they fly, Transcon and also to some international destinations. Some of the Delta seats aren't very comfortable. But they are upgrading them, and if they get more money. In fact, American Airlines is also upgrading, even though they're in bankruptcy, because they're using some of the savings from bankruptcy to improve their first class and business class products. So there's a silver lining to the bankruptcy.
Well, I guess you could look at it that way. Hey, let's move on for a second, because you and I haven't really talked since the new Department of Transportation rules requiring transparency by the airlines to actually reveal what your total price is going to be when they advertise a fare.
Yeah, I don't think it's had any impact whatsoever on bookings. I think people just think it's more honest. The only amusing thing that's happened was our friends at Spirit Airlines have instituted a $2 unintended consequences DOT regulation fee. They just added a fee because they don't like the fees. They don't like the full disclosure of the fees and the taxes. So they've added a new $2 fee in addition to their very hefty booking fee online. They charge, I think, $39 just to book online. And, of course, they charge for carry-on bags and God knows what else. But I don't think it's had any impact whatsoever on bookings. It hasn't discouraged travel. I think, actually, it's a good thing. We do see almost everyone complying there. The DOT has come down on a few airlines for not complying already, and they fined them, tens of thousands of dollars. I don't know if that was intentional that they didn't comply or they just couldn't get it together quickly enough. I think some airlines are still fighting it in court. I don't think they like it. I think they think it's unfair because your cell phone company doesn't have to disclose full taxes and fees. Your cable company doesn't do it. Your rental car company doesn't do it.
Rental car company does it.
They're
under a consent decree. They're under consent decree from every attorney general of every state in the United States that when you book that rental car fee, you have to sit on the phone and listen for another 30 seconds while they tell you the recovery fee, the excise tax, the sales tax, the let you build their sports stadium tax that goes into your rental car fee.
But they don't do it in the advertising. And the
airlines have
to do it in the advertising. And I think the problem is, too, they can't do national advertising as a rental car company because every jurisdiction is different. So they couldn't have an ad in a national edition of the New York Times. The same thing with cell phone companies, because there are different taxes in different cities. Like New York has its own tax. New York City has its own tax. But what about cruises? I think cruises could definitely do full disclosure advertising. They don't put the taxes in or the port charges.
They should. I have no problem now when I go online looking at what I'm going to totally pay. It's easier for me to budget. It doesn't stop me from getting on the plane. It just stops me from getting pissed off.
And I think the airlines know this. I think they've stepped to the plate, and the only airlines really complaining about it is Spirit Airlines, and maybe Southwest doesn't like it either. But yeah.
And Spirit, by the way, is still suing them in court, so we'll see what happens with that case. Again, George Hobica from AirfareWatchdog.com. You can get the entire seating chart in first class in terms of who's got better seats, wider seats, nicer seats, assuming you can even get up to first class. If not, we'll just show you a picture of what first class looks like, and you can come beg looking for cookies on my next flight. How about that, George?
That's great. Okay, see you later. Bye-bye.
You got it, man. When we come back, more from the Trump Ocean Club here in Panama City. And for those people who are addicted to shows like The Bachelor, you know where it was filmed, right here. Anybody got a rose? We'll be back right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Trump Ocean Club in Panama City. By the way, you know what the unit of currency is here? Don't worry about foreign exchange. It's the U.S. dollar. Piece of cake. And for those people who just think the Panama Canal is all that Panama has to offer, how about 1,000 miles of coasts and 1,600 islands? Very, very cool location, by the way. And I mentioned earlier that this is the location of the most recent installment of The Bachelor. And I can't tell you, even though I might even know who's going to get kicked off and who's going away with a rose and who's staying, but Courtney's got some explaining to do. If you've been watching that show, you know you have. I mean, I'm even becoming addicted to it. And then they threw off, what, KCB? She was like the goody two-shoes until she got into that limo. Whoa, a couple of F-bombs got thrown in there. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, now you know what I do during my off hours. But it was actually shot here at the Trump Ocean Club. And I just was sorry I wasn't here when they shot it. But I'm here now. And joining me now is somebody who knows a little bit about that show and a few other things. He's the executive chef here at the hotel. And I'm always interested about Panamanian food because people don't really know what it is. And his name is Daniel Bauza.
Very good.
Did I get it? Bauza.
Very good.
As opposed to the guy from, the village people, Bowser. Talk to me. First time I came down here, mm-hmm. and this goes back 30 years ago, mm-hmm. right? That's when I discovered pulpo, right? That's mm-hmm. really cool stuff, mm-hmm. right? That was like the blackened octopus.
Yeah.
It was great. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Italians think they have a market, a corner on the grilled octopus. No, you guys have been doing it for a long time.
Exactly.
But you didn't come from Panama.
No.
You came from Mexico.
Exactly.
So you had a little bit of a learning curve when you got down here, right? Different kind of food, different kind of culture. Mm-hmm. What was the biggest surprise when you came down here about Panamanian food?
It was about because I thought when I was in Mexico and I came back here I came to Panama, I thought it will be more or less similar to the Mexican food. And I was shocked because it's completely different cuisine. For example, here in Panama, the Panamanian food, they don't use spices. It's not so spicy than in Mexico. And I was really shocked. I said, wow, I thought it will be the same culture of chilies and all these things.
No, you could actually survive the food here.
Exactly.
But more seafood.
Yeah, it's a lot of seafood. A lot of seafood. Because they have both seas. I mean, they have great seafood. I mean, they have all kinds of fishes and you can choose from. It's a very, you know, they have this culture about the seafood gastronomy. It's very interesting.
Okay, so in your short amount of time here, mm-hmm. what's become your favorite dish that might have even surprised you?
One of my favorite dishes here in Panama, it's a sancocho. It's a traditional soup from Panama, no? And it's like if you go to Mexico, everybody's fighting to have the best recipe of mole. If you go to Spain, the best recipe of paella, no? Here in Panama, it's a sancocho. And it's a very rich chicken broth. Then they use some very special roots that they're from here, from Panama. The name is otoy and ñame. And they put chicken, and they put potatoes, and they put corn. And it's beautiful. And then they put something that it's very special, that I think they only have it here in Panama. It's a fresh herb named culantro. It's not cilantro.
No, it's not cilantro.
It's not the same. It's culantro. And gives this, you know, this aroma, this very special aroma to this very rich soup. It's beautiful.
Now, I should say, two nights ago, I had dinner in one of your restaurants here, and you had something on the menu that was so interesting to me and so unusual. I ordered it, and I really liked it, but you've never seen it offered anywhere else. Manchego cheese soup?
Yeah, exactly.
With figs?
Yeah, exactly.
What was that?
That's good.
It was good.
Yeah, but this is the restaurant, Texas restaurant, and we have more like a kind of Mediterranean cuisine, more influence about my roots than I'm from Barcelona. And by the way, my I put this soup because my father used to eat a lot of manchego cheese with even figs or with raisins, and it was very good. And then we create this kind of soup to, you know, to twist a little bit the flavor from the old times.
Can I do a little bit of shout out about the ice cream here?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Thank you.
Do you make it all yourself
Yeah,
here?
We have a very good pastry chef here in the hotel.
I mean, sir, and then there's something here. I had it at an Italian restaurant yesterday. I had it at another restaurant last night. I did it 2 days in a row. Bread pudding. You guys get serious about that.
The bread pudding is another dessert, and it's very typical from Panama.
But I would never have guessed bread pudding being a typical dessert in maybe flan or maybe custard or caramel, but not bread pudding.
But it's beautiful. It was beautiful or not.
It was great. It was great. What's the one thing on your menu that you thought people would love and they wouldn't order it? And the one thing you thought nobody would order that they can't stop ordering?
I thought the lentil soup with chorizo and otoe. I thought it will be some difficult plate to sell. And it's, I mean, everybody loves lentils. And here in Panama, they eat a lot of...
By the way, lentils. No one's ever said to me, everybody loves lentils. You're the first person to ever say
that. You
see? That's like saying,
I love lentils.
You love lentils. That's like somebody saying to me, everybody loves lima beans. No, they don't. Trust me.
It's a very good soup. And we sell it very... I mean, it's one of the most popular plates in Barcelona.
And the one in Barcelona.
In Barcelona, it's the name of the other restaurant.
Of course. And here, what's the one thing that nobody buys?
I can say the meats. Everybody goes for the fish. And, for example, you have
if you're coming to Panama, order the fish.
Yeah.
You got it.
Exactly.
Daniel Baza, the executive chef who came here from the Riviera Maya and now is calling home Panama City. Thank you, man. We really appreciate that. When we come back, winter in the national park. Stuff you didn't realize until right now.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from Panama City, in particular the Trump Ocean Club International Hotel and Tower. Say that three times fast. And taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air a little bit later in the show. We'll be getting to some of those emails. But if you're like me, you're a contrarian traveler. I'm one of those guys who likes to go to Alaska in the winter and Palm Springs in the summer, if you do it the right way. And my next guest has figured it all out, especially when it comes to the national parks. Randy Johnson, welcome back to the show. We've had you on before, but I love winter in the national parks. If you do it right, it's a better experience.
Well, the great thing about winter in the national parks is that it can be everything from Arctic to tropical. I mean, 400 national parks from the very northernmost part of North America all the way into the Caribbean. It's no wonder the national parks are one of the country's premier travel destinations.
Well, you know what? If I had a choice between standing in line in Yosemite or going to Glacier National Park in the winter or even Death Valley in the winter, I would pick those two.
That is probably a good pick, except realize that Death Valley in the winter, that's the high season for Death Valley. It's so hot in the summer that actually many people do go in the winter because it's less crowded.
Whereas well, then, Glacier, I stand corrected. There you go.
Well, you see, I mean, it's all about, the national parks are all about high season and low season, as is the travel world in general. So the national parks do have high and low seasons, just pick it correctly, and it's the perfect time to go, winter especially.
And, of course, up in Oregon, you've got Crater.
Exactly. If you want to ski, if you want snow, you have, you mentioned, you know, Glacier National Park. One of the great wintertime experiences in a national park is right adjacent to Glacier. You can actually take Amtrak to the Isaac Walton Lodge and cross-country ski. It's a very big railroad kind of experience. There are cabooses and rail cars to stay in. And, of course, that's going to be cross-country skiable in Glacier all the way through mid-April of this year. So if you're looking for snow, there's still plenty of winter left if that's your choice of destination.
Well, you know, one of my best winter experiences in a national park happened a number of years ago in Yellowstone where they had some wonderfully groomed trails for snowmobiles, and they rented me a snowmobile. It was colder than you can imagine and colder than I imagined, so I had layers and layers on. And I'm zipping down that trail on the snowmobile, and way in the distance, I see a moose. Now, I go back to the days of Rocky and Bullwinkle, so I figured, how fast could this moose be? He sees me. I see him. He's at least a mile away. I just keep going. And all of a sudden, he starts to pick up a little steam, and he's getting a little faster and faster. And next thing you know, he's coming right at me. I can't outrun him. And I ended up in a snowdrift, and they had to come dig me out. But you know what? That's my lesson. You can't outrun a moose.
Well, you know, you may not be able to outrun a moose, but on a snowmobile, you can quickly get back to warm, comfy accommodations in a national park, or don't forget these, the gateway communities that lie right outside the parks. And, you know, you mentioned a moose. Well, that's one of the real pluses of visiting the national parks in the wintertime. Wildlife sightings are oftentimes a lot easier to come by than in the summer when there are just hordes of people at some parks.
Well, let's just say I had a wild moose sighting up close and personal.
Well, you're lucky.
And he had a snowmobile sighting. So it's sort of like trade-off, you know.
Well, I think I think snowmobile sightings might be more a usual experience to them. But anyway, it was a memory for you, right?
It sure was. Hey, Randy, quick question for you. What would you say is the biggest surprise national park in winter?
The biggest surprise national park in winter? Let me put it this way. I think the biggest surprises for national parks in winter are the ones that are not really hot because they're in the tropics or really cold because they're in the snow belt. Many, many parks throughout the United States are busy in summer or they're kind of hot in summer. Don't forget those in the winter because they might not be covered with snow. They might have fewer visitors, and it might be the perfect time to experience one. Can I give you a suggestion?
Very quickly.
Guilford Courthouse National Military Park. A major battle of the American Revolution took place in March of 1780, and you can experience the reenactment.
You got it. Randy Johnson, the travel editor for National Parks Traveler. Randy, thanks for joining us, and read more about that on our website as well. I'll see you out with the moose. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Trump International Ocean Club Bowling Alley and Spa. No, we'll just call it Trump Ocean Club here in Panama City. The person who's laughing on the other end of that microphone is another one of those American expats, of which there are so many here in Panama. He came down here about 5 years ago. He's now the editor and publisher of El Visitante, the visitor newspaper. His name, Jacob Earler. Hey, man.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Okay, now you're from Seattle. What brought you down here?
I'm from Seattle. I was probably the youngest expat in the world back in 1999 when I moved to San Jose, Costa Rica.
To do what?
To a university exchange, and I was just a guy who didn't get back on the plane.
So basically the witness relocation program's working for you.
Pretty much.
But what brought you to Panama, then?
To Panama, I started exploring. I went up to Nicaragua. The next trip was down to Panama, and I just kept on coming back.
How did you support yourself?
I was working in Costa Rica, call centers.
Really?
Yeah, there's a big interest.
No, don't tell me you were doing that.
I was doing that.
You were the guy I got on the phone all the time?
I was a guy on the phone. I may have been a little bit rude, but, you know, the game was kicking, so...
You weren't doing gambling, were you?
Yes.
No, you were doing offshore gambling?
I was that guy. I didn't move down there to be a part of the industry, but I did want to make money once I decided I loved living in the tropics.
Okay, so there you were at the call center handling calls from guys in New Jersey going, I'd like the Giants minus three.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, exactly. You know the number.
Well, that was the...
Well, that's a big important number, because if you get on three or off three, there's got to be a whole lot more money moving for us to
wow.
get somewhere with the line.
Wow, the hell with travel and tourism. Let's talk about gambling. I'm loving this.
I'm way out of that. I've been way out of that. I moved back to the States in 05. I was in Miami, did two years in New York. I came back to Panama in 07. I had traveled here five times a year 4 or 5 years.
Why Panama?
I had a thing for it. I crossed the border and I got, they call it chicken skin, goosebumps. Yeah, that's what happened to me. So I just kept on coming back. I had a long hiatus. And in 2007, I sold a condo for Corcoran in Manhattan.
For Barbara?
For Barbara. I sold a condo for Barbara. Oh my God. And I took my commission. I came down to Panama and I had a fabulous time. And I looked around and I said, gosh, everyone has been thinking the same thing as me. Right all the way up to Donald Trump, there's really something special going on here in Panama.
It's booming.
It is.
I mean, the construction here is out of control.
Yeah, it's
and yet,
the skyline. Every time you go out to the causeway and you look back at the city, it's different.
As opposed to Miami Beach, where they really lost their you-know-whats, mm-hmm. here, you know, people are moving down because it's not that expensive.
And it's a lot more fun. I think it's a lot more fun. I think we're in a more international world today. Panama has always had the influence of the United States. They're up to date. They're capable. They're running the canal right now and are doing better so than the Americans did when they were running it under the old system. So for people who want to experience something new without going all the way around the world, where you still have great connectivity, the list of reasons is real that why people are coming here.
So you're sticking around for a while?
Yeah, I'll be in.
Still get the chicken skin?
Yes, yes, yes. Every day. Every time I send an issue to press.
Okay, so for most Americans who visit here for the first time, all they're thinking about usually is the Panama Canal. They don't have a clue about the coast, the islands. They really don't.
It was really never promoted before. It was really never promoted before. They just turned the open sign on. The original Canal Zone people, those were the people who really knew that they were located in the best place in the world that you could be.
Well, no, the original Canal Zone people died of malaria.
Let's call that the
second guys. You know what they say, it's the second mouse that gets the cheese. You know that, okay.
And it's quite a bit of cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice down here. But beyond the canal, Panamanian tourism destinations have previously just been something that people who are either in Panama or Panamanians or in the know would go out and experience. And then in the last 10 years, we followed the pattern of Costa Rica. It started in Bocas del Toro. It started in Chiriquí with the residential and tourism stuff. And now you can go and have a really nice time at these really beautiful places.
Plus, if you want to buy property, the cool thing about it is Panamanian law allows you to do that.
It allows you to do that. It's very secure. It's a good investment as well.
What's the biggest surprise when Americans come down here, as I said before, because all they think they know about is the Panama Canal, and they don't even know much about that.
Well, I think the surprise to them is not just the big city, the modern infrastructure, and a population of people who understand you and can get it done. It's the fact that they didn't know about it, and the fact that nobody that they knew about it, and that it's here and it's as real as it is. I think that's a surprise.
One of the biggest booming things in Panama that I've just noticed is medical tourism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got hospitals here affiliated with Johns Hopkins,
correct,
the Cleveland Clinic.
Correct.
At a fraction of the cost.
About half the cost across the board. And people are coming down. And it's one of the things that really supports the tourism with the free insurance through the ATP.
I got to ask about that. I get off the plane the other day and they hand me a little booklet. And the booklet basically says, by the way, if you're here within 30 days, if you get sick, you're covered.
By the way, if anything happens to you, unless you're being reckless or whatnot, whatever happens to you, you're covered for 30 days through the government of Panama. And that's a really innovative
promotion. That's your medical treatment here.
Medical treatment here. They'll take care of you.
Although it doesn't cover medical repatriation. That's something else.
No. Medical repatriation, if you need to be sent back to your home country.
They'll cover that too?
They'll send you back. They'll send you back if it needs to be done.
Wow. On a container ship or on
No, I mean, maybe in a box, but...
Oh, you said that. Okay.
No, they will send you back, but I know that your coverage locally is covered. Yeah.
Wow. Jacob Erler, the editor and publisher of El Visitante. Stick around. We'd love to have you come back for the second hour and talk to us a little bit more about that.
Okay, pleasure.
I also want to know, the statute of limitations still not up with you guys. They're looking for you. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, we got a whole lot more coming from the Trump Ocean Club with Peter Greenberg, and we'll be talking to Jacob Erler when we come back. Right back after these messages.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide. with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide, coming to you from, well, you know what? We've been coming to you from Destin, Florida, from Casa de Campo in the Dominican Republic. Get out your maps, boys and girls. 9 degrees, 0 minutes north. 80 degrees, 0 minutes west. And that 2-0 marks should tell you something, because we're coming to you from Panama, Panama City to be exact. And imagine the only country in the world where you can watch the sunrise over the Pacific and the sunset over the Atlantic. Go figure. Doesn't happen very often. In fact, it happens nowhere else. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me with your name, phone number, question or problem, we'll solve it right here on the air. In the first hour, we were talking with Jacob Erler, who's the editor and publisher of El Visitante, after a checkered career taking bets over the phone in Costa Rica for an offshore gambling operation. Now he's gotten legitimate on us.
I found Panama.
You found Panama. That's right. Safe Refuge, I believe it's called.
Correct, it is.
How many expats are living here?
I think the numbers are somewhere around 30,000 English speakers from the United States and 3,000, 4,000 from Canada.
So that's it, but it's a growing number.
We're a significant population, and those are perhaps old figures, and those are people on the books.
See, what I'm seeing, and tell me if you disagree, Panama, for those people who were the old visionaries, like 5 or 10 years ago, was a place where you'd go to buy a retirement home. Now people are buying a second home here, not necessarily retiring.
It is a great place to come down. There are a lot of great property management companies in the country that can take care of your investment, and it's a nice place to be able to get away. And the connectivity that the country offers makes it an attractive place to live and have a second home. Because from here you can shoot up to Cuba, the Dominican Republic, or down to South America.
And it's a really easy flight back to the States.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, out of Newark, out of JFK, I came in out of Miami.
LaGuardia, yeah.
Well, nothing's safe out of, nothing's easy out of LaGuardia. You went too far.
But you want to get right there.
I know. Yeah. Nothing comes out of LaGuardia without stopping. So, and usually stops at LaGuardia, which is even worse. It pushes back from the gate and it stops. This is what happens. Anyway, when you think about Panama, when you think about other countries that have branded images, so for example, Rio, Carnival.
Correct.
Right? Or New Orleans, you know, with Mardi Gras, right?
Yes.
People forget there's a huge carnival here.
This is true. Our carnival has never been a part of the country's brand until yet in a big international way. And that's kind of what's neat about it. When I first came to Panama in 2001, it was in fact for a carnival on a break from
Costa Rica. Basically you came to play.
I came to play. Yeah. I came to play and I kept on coming back. But I would come down for different events that would be organized by Physical Modelos. I'm talking about like Miss Panama. There was Miss Universe down here. Donald Trump did it in 2003.
So you were chasing babes.
A little bit of that.
Okay. So basically you went from gambling to women.
Gambling to women.
Equally dangerous, by the way.
To Panama.
Oh. But what's different about the carnival here?
What's different about the carnival here is it's undiscovered. It's neat. People get really passionate about it. In the interior, you can find a different style of carnival that's going to be the classic Calle Arriba and Calle Abajo format. So that's Upper Street and Lower Street. And it's two camps. And they come out every year and try it out to each other. So you've got Upper Street, which are basically the people that say, well, we're a little bit upper crust and we're better than you because we're Upper Street. And there are usually less of them. And
you mean like the 1%?
Pretty much. Okay, that's what's going on here. That's what's going on. And then Calle Abajo is the 99%, but it's more like the 25-75 down here. But Calle Abajo has that that really like soulful of the pueblo, of the people.
And who are you hanging out with?
I'm Calle
Arriba. Okay, just checking.
I'm Calle Arriba. Yeah, I am. So I used to do that carnival all the time. It's a lot of fun because it's intimate. It's still personal. It's in a small town where the tradition is very small townish. And the Panamanian people are so friendly in the countryside that you can really just go up anytime. You can open up the visitor newspaper and find us online, and you could look at all these really neat country fairs. So whether it's the carnival or whether it's a tiny religious procession in a village somewhere in the interior, there are really neat, authentic things to see here. The city carnival, on the other hand, is
out of control.
Just a whole lot of jumping up and down, out of control. Spring breaks type stuff. That's really for those kids.
So for the other 51 weeks of the year, where do you like to hang out?
I live in Panama City. I'm very happy here. If there were one place outside of the city that I would live, it would be Bocas del Toro.
Why? Describe it for me.
The beauty, the beautiful Caribbean islands, the beautiful sea, dolphins jumping around, just right out of a postcard stuff.
Now, Bocas del Toro, is that Mouth of the Bull?
Mouth of the Bull, yeah. It was named by Columbus because when they mapped it around and they came down there, he thought that the one part of this island, Bastimentos, the end of it, looks like the mouth of a bull.
But there's so many islands.
Yes, there are several islands up there in the 30s or 40s.
Yeah. Because if you're looking for great beaches in Panama City, you're not going to find that many. But
you don't have to go too far to find a good beach, but you want great beaches, you can go out to Bocas del Toro. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, how many times have you transited the canal?
How many times have I transited the canal? Never.
Really?
I always thought it was a tourist thing, and I was never really on that trip.
But you watch the ships go by.
I watch the ships go by. I go up there all the time. I go up there all the time.
I mean, it really, the engine.
It's a commitment. It's a commitment. You get 5 hours.
Yes,
to go
but
through.
The engineering of that is so
amazing. Oh, I've been into the bowels of it. I mean, that's
oh my God,
really
with the cables and those trains.
Yes, yes, yes. And where you go in, and you can either go all the way in and actually push the button yourself, which is what dignitaries get to do. They'll probably take you down there and have you operate it, because it operates on the same system that it used to operate on before. Nothing has changed. I think they went from...
You're talking about the pushing of the button to open and close the locks.
The way it operates, yeah. It's amazing. And now that they're redoing it, there's a whole lot of excitement in the country. So.
Well, it's going to open up even more.
Yes, yes.
Right, because there's certain ships right now that can't even fit to the...
The post-Panamax ships.
Exactly.
Can't get in. Yeah.
In Panama City, is there a particular restaurant you'd like to go to that nobody knows about that's not in the brochure?
I think all smart restaurants are in the brochure. You want the one that I really like?
We're not messing around here. Go
okay,
ahead.
Okay. Me in my pajamas, Tamborito de Oro in San Francisco. It's Peruvian. It's delicious.
Why?
Because it's simple. It's served with a smile, and it's really good.
And inexpensive.
And it's also probably one of the only restaurants in Panama City that you don't have to get dressed up to go out to.
Do you really go in your pajamas? Come on.
Yes. I have nice pajamas, but I do. That's the spot where I sneak off to eat deliciously, and I don't have to worry about, you know what it's like to have to go out and heavy hand and smile and be somebody eating in New York. Yeah.
So the pajamas and then the bag over the head?
No bag over the head. No bag necessary. Other people, I you could see other people there who are also on the same trip of just going out for a great bite
to
eat.
Okay, so basically
you're... Panama City has great dining, and that's the other thing people don't expect. It's also a formal city. People do dress up. That's the one thing people have to remember when they're coming down here. Bring a pair of pants. Bring a nice shirt, because you might go to something decent. A lot of people come down, they've got a bag full of, you know...
Just flip-flops and shorts.
Flip-flops and the Hawaiian shirt. Please don't do that.
Bring a nice pair of pants.
Bring a nice pair of
and
pants.
And the typical just blue blazer, just in case.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have one of those?
I do. I have a couple.
To go along with the pajamas?
It's from Columbia.
You wear it over the pajamas,
yeah,
don't
I wear it over the pajamas.
Jacob Earler, the editor and publisher of El Visitante. That's Spanish for wear pajamas. Hey, thanks, man. We really appreciate that. And when we come back, a little bit more harder news about Panama, the building of the canal and the building of the new canal, when we come back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Trump Ocean Club in Panama City. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Got a travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Trump Ocean Club in Panama City. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-887-3837. 88 Peter. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. When you think about a canal from the Atlantic to the Pacific, a 48-mile route crossing from one coast to another, which allows and has allowed since the turn of the last century, more or less, ships to avoid a 7,900-mile voyage around Cape Horn. Did it really transform the geography of the Americas? You bet it did. And it's about to transform it again, a whole new canal for even wider and bigger boats. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Also, your emails, got a couple to handle right now. We've got one that's from Selma in Seattle, Washington. I heard you talk about the Capital One Venture Card because the airlines are making redeeming frequent flyer miles so much tougher. However, since American Express offers the same benefits as Capital One, why choose Capital One? You know what it gets down to? What's the interest rate? Find out what the interest rate is for Capital One. Find the interest rate for American Express. Find out if it's revolving credit or it's due at the same time. And if it's the same, which I don't think it is, then you'll make your choice. Then it won't matter. The American Express and Capital One and maybe one or two other credit cards have gone from the affiliated card, which is like affiliated with an actual airline mileage program where you only earn miles on that program, to a card where you don't earn miles on an airline program. You earn points that translate into dollars that they'll actually buy the airline ticket for you. So if you actually go down these two cards and all of their benefits from American Express to Capital One, you'll be able to make a good choice. But once again, look at the interest rate, the APR. That will give you the indication you need to know. Joining us now, a regular on our show, and in fact, you can read him every Tuesday in the New York Times, our good friend from the New York Times, Joe Sharkey. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I have to ask the question, since we're coming from Panama, have you ever been down here?
I have not. No, and I hear now, I'm actually now, for the first time in years, thinking about it. One of your staff members was telling me that there's a lot of building and a lot of construction, a lot of just things are happening there. So it looks like that would be a very interesting place to go.
Well, it really is, Joe. I mean, yeah. The infrastructure here is booming, and it's not just infrastructure in terms of just apartment building or residential building. It's medical care, it's airports, it's convention center. And what most people don't realize, it's not just the Panama Canal. You've got about 1,600 islands out there that have not been overrun by Starbucks yet, and that's a very good thing.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm actually very interested now, so that's I hadn't expected that. So thank you.
Oh, good. See, aren't you glad right. You called in then?
I am, yeah.
Well, let's shift gears about another location that is near and dear to me. I spent a lot of time there, as you know. We did a one-hour special with the president down there, and that is Mexico. Recently, the State Department issued a warning to about 14 separate states in Mexico to advise Americans, essentially, if I read it correctly, to avoid essential travel down there. Can you interpret that for me?
Yeah. That's the strongest warning to date about travel to Mexico, and as you know, it covers 14 states, which is almost half of the states of Mexico. It bothers me to talk about this because, number one, I hate to overreact to these sorts of things, and I hate to be a bummer because I love Mexico and I love, I live in Tucson, as you know, and I love the fact that, Tucson is 60 miles from the border. And one of the things that's really nice about southern Arizona is the Mexican influence. It's got a Mexican culture. So I kind of love all those things. And I like being in a Mexican culture. On the other hand, you got to look at the situation. And, last year there were like 15,000 drug-related murders in Mexico, most of them in the northern border areas. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, there have been 47,000 since December of 2006. Last year in New York, there were 209 homicides. Sure. So, I mean, you got to look at those numbers and say, yeah, I mean, okay, the State Department has a responsibility to throw up these warnings. Mexican officials have said, with some justification, that that's an overreaction, that they're out of that's the warning is out of proportion to the threat. On the other hand, my mother-in-law is visiting, and I like my mother-in-law. She's visiting from upstate New York, and the other day she hadn't been in Tucson before, and we were talking about should we take her to Nogales, which is the border town 60 miles from from here? And I said, no. Number one, there is that issue of, I mean, Nogales used to be considered very safe, but even in Nogales, the violence has been increasing, and there have been shootouts sometimes in daylight. And number two, Peter, it's sad. It's no longer as joyous a place as it used to be. It's just too darn sad to go there. And the shopkeepers, you know how the shopkeepers are in these border towns. They love to banter with the visitors, and it's a fun place. And the shopkeepers are, a lot of the shops are closed, and it's just become a sad place. So
I have to put something in perspective, and that when you take a look at those numbers, which by the way are not insignificant in the least, and they're pretty scary. Of all those people killed, 99.9% of them are Mexicans. It's an internal drug war among gangs or between gangs. And of the 20 Americans who have been killed over the last 4 years, I would venture to guess that 18 of those 20 were vacationing American drug dealers.
Well, maybe, the State Department warning now has this number, that the number of U.S. citizens murdered in Mexico in 2011, that's last year, was 120 compared with 35 in 2007. I would imagine that the best way to get in trouble in a dangerous place is to go bar hopping at night, and some of that may be that. It may well be some visiting drug dealers, but you can't dispute that there's an issue that at least one of the things I wish we'd see is a much more I think we're having it here, but a much more cogent and sort of sensible discussion about what the reality is of the violence
I agree with
in
you.
Mexico.
In
and
fact,
the travel sites are not doing that very well.
No,
they're
not
encouraging kids to go down there willy nilly because things are cheap, on spring break. And I think there has to be a lot more caution.
There can be caution, but I look at an advisory as an advisory, as opposed to telling me not to go. And there are places in Tucson I wouldn't be going to after 8 o'clock at night as well. But here's the interesting thing. Right where you are, Joe, one of the things that the president of Mexico accuses the United States of is that on the border between Arizona and Texas and Mexico, there are over 7,000 gun stores that are there for not because of a coincidence. They're there because proxies can go in there, pass the test, and 3 days later walk out there, walk out with five submachine guns and then sell them across the border.
That's the Pulitzer Prize story of this year, if somebody writes that and writes it right.
Yeah.
That is just a barn burner of a story. The relationship and I'm not blaming gun dealers, but the relationship between corruption on this side of the border and corruption on that side of the border, the corruption on this side of the border has not been adequately looked at by the media. In southern Arizona are lazy, but I think the national media need to get on the stick and look at how does this work? Where does the money flow? Where are the guns flowing? I mean, we had this debacle, this operation. What was it? Operation Fast and Furious.
Yeah, where the guys got killed with the guns we sold them.
Yeah, but we have to start looking at where's the money going? Who's laundering this money? How many are there banks involved? I don't know how this economy works without banks being involved.
Well, one of the things that the Mexican government has done is change the rules about how much money can be deposited in an account in cash, and they've completely restricted it now.
Right.
And that's put a little bit of a chokehold on that laundering situation. But you and I tomorrow, Joe, could walk into any one of those gun stores, fill out the application, buy 10 guns, wait the required 2 or 3 days, pass the background test, put them in the trunk of our car, and drive them across the border.
Oh, there's no question. I'm a veteran. I'm a military veteran, a Vietnam veteran. I qualify in Arizona for a concealed weapons permit with no testing or nothing at all, just because I'm a veteran.
Now that you've told me that, I'm gonna keep my distance from you.
Yeah, all right. Now you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, from now on, we're going to introduce him as Joe Sharkey Packin.
Hey, I'm also a Saguaro National Park Mounted Border Patrol volunteer, so come to Tucson.
How many horses have you killed?
You might have to deal with me. I give directions.
Oh, my goodness.
From a horse, from a horse, though.
Oh, my God. Joe Sharkey demeaning himself on my show. I love it.
What a country.
All right, Joe Sharkey, of course, in a very serious way. Great travel reporting every Tuesday in the New York Times and a regular on our show. We're always happy to have him. Joe, thanks very much. When we come back, we're going to go local right here with the Bloomberg correspondent here in Panama City about stuff you need to know that you absolutely don't, and it's going to help you out a lot.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming to you from the Trump Ocean Club in Panama City, Panama. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We'll get to some of those emails a little bit later. And as you know, every week we spotlight a new volunteer vacation project. You'll find that on our website. Great things you can do to give back to others and build an entire vacation around it. And this week we want to focus on Panama because we're here. And if you want to send your kids on an educational summer program, well, this is the place to go. Amigos de las Americas has been working in Latin American communities since, get this, 1965. And this summer, they've got two programs in Panama. You can spend a summer volunteering in a coastal town, working with the local youth and environmental projects, or get a little bit further inland with the indigenous people of Gunayala. By the way, their fee includes your international airfare, your food, your lodging. Keep in mind, the deadline for applying this year is April 3rd, so get on the stick and get down here. And of course, check our website, petergreenberg.com, for the entire comprehensive list of all those organizations doing such great work that allow you to come. And for those of you who have kids over the age of 8, many of them allow you to take your kids on these trips as well. Life-changing experiences. Early in the show, we were talking to Jacob Erler, who's the editor of the Visitante, or El Visitante, the newspaper here. And, of course, he's an escapee from Costa Rica and a few other places. Now he's living full-time here. My next guest is living full-time here, another escapee. Everybody's an escapee. He's the Bloomberg News correspondent in Panama, Eric Szabo. Hey, man.
Thanks for having me.
Now, what brought you down here?
I was in Nicaragua before this.
So you wanted to upgrade?
Definitely.
I see. Oh, there you go. I knew it.
I hadn't been in an elevator for 3 years until I got to Panama.
Is that a good thing?
I miss the city. I lived in New York City for a long time. So you get to Panama.
So you want to hear some police sirens. You want to hear buses.
I want people yelling at me. I want grumpy people. Nicaragua, very nice. It's more of a city. It's definitely a nicer feel for me.
Yeah, but the infrastructure here is growing so rapidly.
No, it's bizarre. And if you go back home to the United States, and a lot of people compare this to Miami, you look at Miami, it's just kind of stopped. It's getting a little bit busier now, but here it continues.
But I feel an energy here. Yeah. I feel a pace here. I feel a rhythm here. I hate to say it, I feel the money here. The money is coming in.
There's a lot of money circulating, and it's much different from before. A lot of it's just it's in real estate. There's real businesses here. There's a lot of banks, a lot of people from Colombia and Venezuela on top of Americans coming down to invest. So, yeah, it's surprising. You see Lamborghinis, stuff that you don't see in Central America.
No. And yet, you get all the infrastructure that you want in terms of, if you want McDonald's, you can find that. That's easy. But you also get great shopping malls. The infrastructure is coming in, including convention center.
No, and there are new restaurants open all the time. I'm born and raised in Ohio, so I like the fast food. There's Wendy's.
Oh God, don't say
no,
that.
I
oh,
did.
Come
it's,
on.
It's, don't. It's a fault, but they're here. If you want that, they're here.
See, I would come down here if they would open up an In-N-Out Burger.
Now
we're talking, right?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
No, that
and I don't even eat meat. I would open the thing up.
Yeah. Right. No, that In-N-Out you can't compare, but for fast food, yeah.
Okay, but you've been down here how long now?
In Panama, 3 years, and in Nicaragua before that, 3 years.
Okay, so what have you seen in 3 years that has been the most surprising to you? Because you came down here, one of the reasons is because it was growing.
Right.
You knew the canal work was going to start. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But just in terms of the infrastructure, because it's one thing when you want to build all these buildings. You have to fill the rooms. You got to have airlift. Right. You know, so who's coming down here? I mean, what airlines are really increasing their service down here?
You've got a few Venezuelan airlines now, but largely it's Copa, the kind of
which is Panamanian, owned by a Panamanian family.
It's a good airline.
And they're co-chaired with Continental.
Continental. So you have American, Sprint just opened up an airline. So they're expanding the airport.
Who just opened an airline?
Spirit.
Oh, Spirit.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But they're expanding the airlines. Expanding the airport. So you'll have you have more options to get into Panama. Copa is mostly the main route, and they're starting new flights to the U.S., so you'll be seeing them a lot more.
Okay, so you've got the infrastructure going on, but how is the cost structure changing? Prices are going a little up.
Inflation's about 6%. It's not as bad as other places. It's still relatively affordable, but you're definitely seeing some prices go up, and it's a little hard to watch beer prices go up. But.
So basically, Wendy's and beer, you're in.
Yeah, okay, that's one of my fallbacks.
Okay, fine. Now, to what extent do you attribute all this to The Bachelor?
I don't know how much that's involved quite yet. I haven't seen the impact.
I have to tell you, when I told people I was coming down here, I figured they'd want to know about the Panama Canal, the history of Spanish-American War. I mean, no, they just want to know about The Bachelor.
Yeah, no, that show...
Do you watch that show?
I do. No, I'm afraid not. I watch other American shows. I watch The Amazing Race and stuff, and it's funny to watch them go through places that I know. House Hunters is big. They'll come to Panama. So I watch some.
So you're the only person in Panama City not watching The Bachelor?
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, okay, fine. You want me to fill you in?
I can have some friends, but go ahead, yeah.
I'm just telling you. I still don't understand. Well, there's some conniving going on in that show.
Well, I understand the concept. I've seen some other...
They actually shot it here at the hotel.
Right? No, I'm sorry I missed it.
Okay. We'll help you out.
Okay, I appreciate it.
We'll help you out. I just was turned on to this cool website the other night here called ustvnow.com.
Uh-huh.
So it's a free service. You just log into ustvnow.com and you can get all the U.S. networks. It's very cool.
No, and movies too. We got movie theaters, so there's American presence here, entertainment.
I love it. Listen, stay with me, Eric. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Panama Canal and what's happening there, which is huge. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Trump Ocean Club Tower, Casino, Bowling Alley, and Spa. No, it's the Trump Ocean Club. We'll be back with more right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Trump Ocean Club in Panama City, Panama. We've been talking with Eric Szabo, the Bloomberg News correspondent here in Panama, the only person living in Panama who hasn't seen The Bachelor, but that's okay, we forgive you, because now we're going to shift into some more important stories, and that is the most amazing engineering since they built the Panama Canal is what they're doing now to the Panama Canal. I mean, I encourage people to go out there and take the tour. I am so fascinated with process, not just product, that when you see what it took to actually make that canal, how many people failed trying, and then they finally got it, and then it's been operating ever since so efficiently, and now they're making it even wider? What are they doing?
No, expansion's a lot easier this time around. Basically, it'll double the size of the ships that can fit through it. The ships are getting bigger. It's just cheaper to ship these giant, their size of the Empire State Building that are going to be able to fit through the canal.
I mean, the current ships are called the Panamax ships because they literally can fit in with maybe about a half to 1 inch to spare on either side. It is so tight. And those are the ships that are built to those specifications, like the Queen Mary II. Some of those ships just barely make it through.
No, it's one of the only places in the world where you have to change out the captain. There has to be a captain that specializes in putting the ship through these locks. It's stunning to watch how little room they have. And it's been like that they wanted to build bigger ships 100 years ago. So at this point, they've got around to it, and they're building as fast as they can.
I mean, to give you some of these statistics, the current maximum Panamax ship is 965 feet long and 106 feet wide. If you think that's big, the new one is going to be allowing you to go through at 1,200 feet long. That's, four football fields long?
Yeah, Empire State.
It's four foot buildings long and 160 feet wide. That's just beyond comprehension.
No, and they're going to be able to carry a lot more cargo, like three times as much cargo, so all the ports along the East Coast are trying to catch up with Panama, waiting for this huge new expansion.
And let me give you some financial comparisons here. In 1928, the lowest toll paid to go through the Panama Canal was paid by a guy named Richard Halliburton, who crossed the canal swimming, and he paid 36 cents. A regular cruise ship today, not one of the super tankers, just a regular cruise ship going through, about $200,000.
No, it supports Panama. They pay about $1 billion a year in toll fees to the Panamanian government. So, you know, the country benefits from this canal and the fees.
Is that the largest single source of income to the government here? It must be.
Pretty much. I mean, there's, yeah, it's just, it's not the biggest part of the economy, but it's definitely the biggest part giving to government revenue.
Wow. So it's the lifeblood of, it powers the government.
And they're really banking on once it's expanded, how much more money. They're basically, they're projecting that they're going to double. You get $1 billion in fees now that goes to the government. They're saying $2 billion after the expansion.
Well, listen, the same principle that applied when they built the canal applies now. If you can save 7,900 miles by not having to go all the way around South America.
Yeah. No, it's cheaper even to, if you drop off your stuff at the West Coast ports and put it on a train and then ship it into Chicago, it's cheaper to go around. It's always going to be cheaper on the boat.
And by the way, the first big train that was basically coastal, the transcoastal train in the world was built here.
I didn't realize that.
Aren't you glad you stopped by?
I did. Bachelor, and I got to go home and catch up.
Now, when they put the Bachelor on the train, that's a separate show.
No, it'll be a great show. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of roses on the tracks.
I'll watch that.
A lot of roses on the tracks. You've been down here almost 4 years. What's the biggest surprise to you?
Two things, I think. I just surprised how, especially for a Central American capital, how livable it is. And just it's easier to get around. There's new restaurants. It's a thriving city. And beyond just the people who come down to Central America usually just buy houses, you have a real like entrepreneurial culture here with younger people who want to start. You're doing tech startups. So it's like a regular city. I lived in New York City for a long time. Really missed it being in Nicaragua. Here I get a sense of that it's a big thriving city.
And I have to say, you know, I'm one of those guys who needs this connectivity.
Exactly.
The wireless works real well in Panama.
No, it's good speed.
A lot better than Nicaragua.
We have electricity here? Yeah, no. Nicaragua's a beautiful country.
No, look, Nicaragua, by the way, has a seacoast that nobody even knows.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. And people, but just don't expect your BlackBerry to like hum in there real fast.
No, exactly.
Here it works.
In the city, everything works really well, and it just keeps on going.
At the bottom line is, how long will you stay now?
Well, I could stay until the canal's finished, I guess. But I get antsy. We're reporters, so we kind of want to go on to the next big story. It's a great place to live. I cover the rest of Central America and all the problems, and I get to do it from a very nice place in Panama.
Yes, you do. Eric Szabo, the correspondent for Bloomberg News, right here in Panama City. An aficionado of Wendy's about to watch reruns of The Bachelor, and he'll never forgive me for mentioning it again. Thanks for joining us. When we come back, a little more history about Panama with a guy who has a very interesting name, Uncle Marty. If you want me to explain what that means, stick around. We'll be right back from the Trump Ocean Club here in Panama City, Panama. Peter Greenberg Worldwide, right back with you.
What?
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Trump Ocean Club in Panama City, Panama, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we will solve it right here on the air. We were talking with Eric Szabo from Bloomberg a little bit while ago, and I warned you about my next guest. His name is Uncle Marty. His full name is Martin Daniel Harrington. And if you didn't know any better, you'd think he was an American, right, Marty?
Yes.
Come on.
Never judge the book by the cover.
That's right, because you were born here, and you're just hiding the accent, aren't you?
I try to sometimes impress my American friends.
Okay, well, you're impressing me. You're 64 years old. I mean, you've seen a lot of change here.
I have.
You know, most people don't understand the real history of Panama, how its close association with the United States. It was the first Latin American country to make the U.S. dollar legal tender. It still is, right?
Since June 20th, 1904, when William Howard Taft signed the Monetary Convention.
And why did he do that?
Well, because the U.S. had the payroll, you know, in the canal zone.
They were on the canal zone. It was just easier.
Yeah, and it was the best way of doing it. And thank God we still keep it. By constitutional prohibition, we cannot print our paper currency in Panama. Thank God.
Where is it printed?
Well, I think it's printed at the Franklin Mint. It's called the U.S. dollar.
But it wouldn't be the Franklin Mint.